This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
The season preview installment of Bustin' Loose Baseball continues. With Toby Altizer, I'm Grant Paulson, producer Darris Dameron, making everything sound smooth. Let's get into the pitching staff for the Nationals. We'll start in the rotation. For the first time, Mackenzie Gore draws the opening day assignment, the 26-year-old lefty who was drafted third overall originally by the San Diego Padres and came over to the Nats in the Juan Soto deal, has finally risen to the top of the rotation. This will be his fourth season already since the trade with the Nationals, and he's gotten better statistically every year in the major leagues. Toby, we've talked about him for years. The stuff, his front of the rotation caliber, the velocity, the ability to miss bats with breaking stuff. I mean, he screams ace, but he hasn't put it all together. He still runs into the crooked number inning. Second inning's been a bugaboo. He has the touchdown that he gives up here and there that ruins the ERA. If he could find a way to iron out some of those bad outings, this is a guy that could end up being a building block front of the rotation starter for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, and every year that he's pitched, his ERA has gone down, and last year it was actually significantly down. You know, his first season, he didn't pitch all that much, just a couple of games, 16 total, 13 starts. He finished with a 4.50 ERA back in his time with San Diego. 2023, 27 starts, a 4.42 ERA. Last year, 32 starts, down to 3.90 ERA. And if you just look at month to month, he was really, really good for most months, and then 2 months kind of derailed his ERA. You look at April and March, he was 3.19. May was a 2.60. August was a 4.05, which is respectable. And September, finishing the year in five starts, he was a 1.26. But his June and July were a 5.13 and a 7.62. So it was just about some of that consistency for him. He hit kind of the dog days in the middle there and struggled. If he can find some consistency, whatever the funk was that he was in, walking some more guys, whatever that was in the middle, if he can find some of that, the stuff is electric. We know that. We've talked about that for years and how good this guy can be. This was at one point the top pitching prospect in all of baseball. He's got the stuff. We know that. The fastball's good. And I think his changeup's coming along. He's got a good breaking ball. He's got everything that you need for an ace. And I think for me, Grant, the thing for him that is the difference maker on whether he's going to reach that potential or not is his mentality. It's not that you need to get this guy locked in. It's almost that he's too dialed in. He's too much of a perfectionist, too hard on himself. And at times it would distract him. He'd walk a guy, he'd miss on a pitch, and you'd see him on the mound frustrated, and it would kind of derail the inning. We saw this happen with Strasburg before he was able to kind of grow into being an elite pitcher. And I think for Mackenzie Gore, it's the same thing. And, you know, we haven't seen on the field yet this year because we saw him a couple times in spring training. We haven't seen any real action yet. But just from conversations, just from being around him the last couple of years compared to this year, it seems like he's grown in that area. So that's something I'm going to keep an eye on. How does he do mentally as the maturity as a pitcher, specifically now being the ace of the staff? I think that's going to be a big part of whether it's a good season or a bad season for him.
Yeah, he throws the fastball 96 miles an hour. 55% of the time. Now, average lefty in baseball throws 93 miles an hour. That is an 80th percentile fastball velocity for him. His average exit velocity is 74th percentile, and his swing and miss is 74th percentile. A barrel percentage is 70th percentile. I mean, he does a lot of things like a horse who pitches atop a rotation on a first division team, you know, a playoff caliber, a World Series caliber team would do. But like so many arms, the difference between, you know, being an ace and being a three, being a frontliner for a good team or not, is just, can you do that all the time or two thirds of the time? Right. He's trying to get there and now make it three quarters of the time, go from, you know, about 66% of the time to 75% of the time. And if you're ever going to become a guy that's starting in an all-star game or competing for Cy Young Awards, you probably do it 80 or 90% of the time, Max Scherzer style. But he's just continuing. He's only 26, you know, entering his prime now, hopefully, to get a little more consistent with each season. Jake Irvin's going to be the second pitcher in the rotation for the Nationals. He told us at the gala that he's going to throw on Saturday. He was supposed to have pitched in Monday's exhibition that didn't happen against the Baltimore Orioles. You know, Irvin's interesting. He's a 28-year-old success story, drafted in the fourth round by the Nats back in 2018, kind of similar to Mitchell Parker, who made the rotation in the fifth slot. Both of those guys had walk problems in the minor leagues that they've largely left behind them. Irvin's older, started a little earlier, 2 years before professionally than Parker. But, I mean, at 28, Irvin, and at 25 now, Parker make up 40% of the rotation as homegrown developed pitchers, something the Nats had not done really since Steven Strasburg and Jordan Zimmermann with any success in years and years. And that's even with the first round picks like Lucas Giolito and Eric Fetty and some of the other guys that they drafted. But Irvin, a fourth rounder, Parker, a fifth rounder, you know, a couple of years removed from one another. Both last year kind of entrenched themselves. Irvin threw 175 innings, Parker threw 150. You need those guys to build on that in terms of giving you length, because you don't have Patrick Corbin to go out there and give you six innings every 5 days and get kicked in the teeth and save the bullpen. So I think they need some durability from those guys. They need them to take the ball every 5 days, but you also obviously want them to compete. And I think Irvin gives you a better chance with his stuff maybe than even Parker does in terms of having an opportunity to go out and have some really good outings.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Jake Irvin has proven himself to be a reliable starter for this team the last couple of years. Last year kind of ran out of gas at the end of the year, but for the most part was really, really good for them all season. The one gripe I'd have with the rotation is just the fact that it doesn't feel like they invested enough there. You know, Jake Irvin, I like a lot in the rotation. Do I want him being in number two right now? Probably not. I think he can pitch like that. Go back and watch the 4th of July game last year. He was awesome against the New York Mets. It was probably my favorite performance out of a National last year. Do I think he's going to be able to do that all the time? No, I don't know that he is a number two, but he can pitch like it from time to time. But you're throwing him into the mix to be kind of a number two because you don't have someone else. Mitchell Parker, you know, a fourth or fifth guy kind of fitting into there, because where does Trevor Williams, where does Mike Soroka kind of slot in? So that's the gripe I have.
Parker would be the perfect, like, extra guy, right?
Yes.
In a perfect world, he'd be your depth where you need a starter two and you call on Parker, and instead, you know, you're lined up now, or if he's healthy, he may go out and start 30 games or something like that. The veterans in this rotation, one is a holdover who actually came back via free agency after testing the market, and that's Trevor Williams, the 32-year-old who they signed via free agency away from the Mets back in December of 22. So he'll be going into year three here in D.C. And then Michael Soroka, who we mentioned earlier, who at 27 feels like he's been around longer than his age. because he got to the big leagues at 20, because he was the runner up for rookie of the year at 21, because he was top six in Cy Young balloting that year. And he was the youngest opening day starter in Braves history back in 2020, in that pandemic season, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, in Williams, I'll be curious to see how they treat him. I would imagine it's similar to last year, where they go complete five and dive. They feel like if we give him two times through the order, that he can be okay, but we don't want to expose him and his stuff a third time because he'll get worked over. That really did have some success. I mean, his ERA was barely over two at the end of last season, and it was sub two for a good stretch of the year before he got hurt. And then the other arm here to discuss is Soroka really quickly. The stuff early in his career was legit, and he had some flashes this spring where velocity was up 96 miles an hour, touching sevens and throwing some good off-speed stuff, and kind of reminds you of him being an elite top prospect with the Braves. I love the flyer on Soroka. I don't have delusions of grandeur here. I'm not sure it's going to work out, but I think it's the exact right thing for them to be doing, is taking a risk on a guy like him and maybe striking gold on a pitcher who was on his way to stardom, who fell victim to several injuries.
Yeah, so with Trevor Williams, real quick, I need to know which one we're going to get. His first year in D.C., 30 starts, a 5.55 ERA. Last year, 13 starts, a 2.03 ERA.
There Don't really you hasn't think the been... usage is a big part of that? They used him differently, and it seemed to work.
Big time. Five and dive. He was really effective last year, so I think that's going to have to be your plan. To your point a little bit earlier, they need a workhorse. I don't know who it's going to be, but they need guys to go six and seven. Otherwise, this bullpen is going to be the most worked bullpen in baseball. It could be something that they might look decent in April and May, and then all of a sudden June they look like the worst bullpen ever because all these guys are getting overworked. But then the other thing too with Soroka, we were having this conversation with some people down in West Palm about this. This signing to me is a little bit different than some of the others, where this one seems like they want him to stick in the rotation and be there all year, versus the Jesse Winkers, the Eddie Rosarios, the Nelson Cruzes, the Jamer Candelarios. They were there to kind of rehab their image and then get traded, or, you know, it wasn't going to work out. And some of them worked, some of them didn't. This one strikes me as someone they want to be in the rotation all year because they want to win. Like we talked about earlier with Jake Irvin, I kind of mentioned that. Mike Rizzo talked about it. It just seems like this one they want to work, and we'll see if it does. First half, you know, first bit of spring training, he was good. Second half, he struggled a little bit, but I think it's going to be interesting. He's definitely someone that has the talent, but is he able to get back to what he once was?
Yeah, without Corbin again in the rotation, and everyone could make their jokes if they want to, but that was a lot of innings and kind of a known guy that no matter what was happening, you know, he was going to go pitch you a bunch of innings. So that means Gore can't have the blowups where he's only going, you know, four and five innings, especially if you're going five and dive with Williams. It means you need some depth out of Irvin, and they really need Soroka to stay healthy and to be, you know, consistent in pitching every 5 days for them. Or else they're going to start dipping into some of the arms they've got at AAA sooner than they want to this season. We will make our predictions for the 2025 Washington Nationals baseball season next on Bustin' Loose Baseball. This is our Nats season preview.
See you later!
This is the Bustin' Loose Baseball Nationals season preview ahead of opening day 2025. Before we get to our predictions, Toby, we have not really talked about the bullpen. There are still some questions as to how the bullpen is going to shape up for Davey Martinez. Do you anticipate it being a strength, weakness, or somewhere in the middle?
Probably somewhere in the middle. They didn't really bolster it a whole lot. They brought back Kyle Finnegan after they non-tendered him. Lucas Sims is kind of your big addition there. But the name to keep an eye on is Jose A. Ferrer. Everybody talked about him down in West Palm. He might end up closing some games at some point, or maybe even takes over the closer role at some point this season. So keep an eye on Ferrer, how he does early in the year. Could maybe impact his role as the season goes on.
Yeah, I'd go as far as to say on opening day, if you've got a inning with the game on the line where Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber are batting, I'm using Ferrer, the 25-year-old power lefty who throws 100. His stuff's just getting better and better. This is a guy that pitched in a futures game at one point in time. Finnegan's almost 34, and to your point, you know, they non-tendered him, and there was a time where they weren't planning on bringing him back, and it just kind of so happened that the market wasn't there, that they could get him back much cheaper than they anticipated. So it worked out. He'll close early on, but I would not be married to him in the ninth inning for any reason. Jorge Lopez has some closing experience. One of three free agents they brought in who will be in this pen. Lopez, Lucas Sims and Colin Poche. I think it will be okay at the end of the season, but I certainly don't think it's going to be a strength. They may need to add as this thing goes on. If Jackson Rutledge, their former first-round pick, they've moved to the bullpen, could throw well, that would be a big, big deal for them. All right, let's get to some season predictions. I want to start with the win total. So you can give me the exact win total if you don't mind, but the last 2 years they've won 71 games, so let's start there. Do they go over that finally?
Yeah, I'll go over. I think they're not an 80-win ball club. I think they're somewhere right in the middle of that 70 and 80 wins. So 75, 76 wins. I'll officially go with 76 wins this year, 76 and 86.
I could absolutely see them being like a 78-win team that really surprises and impresses. I just don't love the rotation as much as I want to. I could see it taking a step backwards, oddly enough, this year with Corbin out. And for that reason, I'm going to say 74 wins, which doesn't feel fun saying that ahead of opening day. But I think it's going to be a fun, entertaining 74 wins with the youth on the team and guys like James Wood and Dylan Cruz having a lot of great moments along the way. Speaking of which, James Wood's projected home run total, 19.5. You going over or under?
Over. I think he gets to 20 this year. I think 20 minimum is kind of what you expect. I wouldn't be disappointed if he hits 18. I don't want to set expectations too high, but if he plays 162, I feel like 20 is a minimum.
Hey, here's where I'm at on that. I'll go over as well. But tell me if you disagree. If he hits 20, I'm content. If he hits 25, I'm really excited. If he hits 30, let's all do cartwheels. Like, and I don't think 30 is a realistic ask or in the cards, but I guess my point is 20 is kind of the floor. Less than 20, I'll be a little bit disappointed probably. You know, less than 15 would be a huge disappointment. But I would say over 20, 20 to 25, reasonable. 25 is where I start to be very, very happy and thrilled. Anything beyond 25 home runs, I think, is just a really, let's throw a party and get ready for 40 in a couple years.
Yeah, I mean, I try not to set expectations too high for these guys. That way I'm not, you know, I hate when people set expectations so high that he hits 25 and somehow people are disappointed. But to your point, the guy that he gets compared to all the time just because of size is Aaron Judge, and he at 52 as a rookie. So, you know, like, I don't want to just see him end the season with 15.
All right, rapid fire here. Bold prediction, offense.
I think that CJ, it wouldn't be bold to say 40 because he's done that before, but I think he's going to hit, he's going to have 50 plus stolen bases. I went with 60 last year. I'm going to dial it back, but 50 stolen bases for CJ. He figures it out again.
All right. I'm going to say Josh Bell hits 25 home runs, which at this point of his career, I think is pretty bold. Bold prediction, pitching.
Mackenzie Gore lowers his ERA by a half run again and finishes with a 3-4 ERA or lower.
Ooh, I love that. I also have a Mackenzie Gore bold prediction. I'm going to say 210 strikeouts for Mackenzie Gore, and he's in the running for most punchies maybe in Major League Baseball in the final month or so of the season, which brings us to the end of our predictions. Give me a sleeper national who is going to be thought of with much more esteem at the end of the season than at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, this is a tough one because last year it would have been probably Luis García was the answer. I think it's K-Bert. K-Bert was coming off an encouraging 2023, had a really disappointing 2024. I don't think he's going to be a good defensive catcher. I just don't think that's ever in the cards. I just don't think he has that. But I think his bat's going to come back more to being, I wouldn't say he'll be spectacular, but he'll be average, which would be an upgrade over what he was last year. So if he can get back to, you know, hitting 15 to 20 homers and driving in 60 to 70 runs like he did in 2023, I think he'll be happy with that. That was an encouraging sign. And then last year, it was just such a disappointment that I think a lot of people are out. Like we've talked about plenty of times with his contract, he's not going anywhere. So if he can suddenly prove himself to be someone that you can at least feel good about going forward again, I think that would be a big step forward for him.
I'll go with the aforementioned Jose Ferrer. I think he could be a lights out reliever by the end of the season that everybody in baseball is talking about. I will also say that my expectations for James Wood are superstardom ultimately. And I think he takes a big step toward that. You know, hopefully going into next season, he's talked about in a whole new light than he is right now. Nothing more exciting than the first week of and the initial days of a Major League Baseball season. Enjoy opening day. Remember, Bustin' Loose Baseball is a Nats podcast available wherever you get your audio, brought to you by Odyssey. talk about the team before and after every series multiple times a week. So please subscribe, rate, review wherever you get your audio, and hang with us all season long. For Toby Altizer and producer Darris Dameron, Grant Paulson saying so long for this season preview of the 2025 Nationals on Boston Loose Baseball.